I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Tiffany Justice. She's a wife and mom of four school-aged children. After serving 4 years on the school board of the school district of Indian River County, Florida, she co-founded Moms for Liberty, a national nonprofit, nonpartisan organization fighting for the survival of America by unifying, educating, and empowering parents to defend their parental rights at all levels of government. Founded in January of 2021, Moms for Liberty currently has 275 chapters in 44 states with over 115,000 active members. So first off, thank you for your work in the world. And second, thank you for being in the program.
Thank you for having me, Derek. I appreciate it. So we are now in 48 states with over 300 chapters and over 125,000 members. So we've grown even from the last time that information was updated. I'll have to work on that.
So what is Moms for Liberty?
Moms for Liberty is a nonpartisan, nonprofit, grassroots organization. Tina Deskovich and myself, we founded it in 2021, and we're moms. I'm a mom of four, as you said, and I served on school board, and I saw behind the education curtain in American government, serving on school board, and then COVID happened, and all of America got to see behind the education curtain, and it's really messy back there. There's a lot of excuses being made for educational failure. And unions have an undue influence in your children's education and in our government processes, really in our political system as well. So Moms for Liberty was created. You read that mission statement. It's the same today as it was the day we started the organization. We took 30 days, December of 2020, to really figure out what we were going to do as far as starting this organization in January 1st, 2020, when we launched. And the mission statement is to unify, educate, and empower parents. And we do that every day by bringing people together and then, you know, bringing them up to speed on these issues that oftentimes are really common sense stuff, right? We'll talk about some of that today, hopefully. But and then, you know, when people are unified and they're educated on an issue and they feel empowered, then they can make change happen. And the goal for Moms for Liberty has always been to create effective advocates, not people who are yelling, standing outside and yelling at a building, but people who are building relationships and really engaging to make change happen.
So you use the phrase behind the educational curtain a couple times. I guess first, can you talk about that? And second, can you talk about some of the problems that you see in education?
Yeah, so school districts do two things really well. Celebrate themselves and protect themselves. And oftentimes they celebrate themselves to protect themselves. So you'll sometimes hear a school district say, oh, you know, we're doing the best of neighboring counties, but what they'll leave out is they didn't actually improve in educational achievement in their county, but other counties got worse. And so there's a lot of that game playing happening when it comes to educational statistics. It's really hard to know if your child is going to a school and getting what they need from that school when they're there. The other thing is protect themselves. They've got a lot of lawyers and other people that are really invested in making sure that the system looks successful, right? The teachers union is invested in making sure that the system appears successful. So again, really hard for parents to get a good read. Is my child doing well in school? Are they getting what they need? Can they get what they need from this school? These are questions that parents deserve the answer to. Also transparency, Derek. Parents deserve to know what their children are learning in school. So every parent has a fundamental right to direct the education of their children. You can't direct something if you're reacting to it constantly. And so we need a lot more transparency in what our kids are being taught so that parents can decide if it's something that they want their child to participate in. And hopefully we'll get to this at some point in the interview. In a lot of places around the United States, not only is there not transparency, but when parents are finding out about what's being taught and they're concerned about it, when it's antithetical to their belief system in the home, they're being told that it doesn't matter. In fact, a judge in Montgomery County, Maryland, told parents that the teaching in the classroom was antithetical to the religion of the parents, but it didn't really affect their free their ability to practice their religion. You know, we have separation of church and state. Certainly, if someone was getting up at the front of a classroom and teaching about Jesus Christ and sharing passages from the Bible, I would imagine there would be parents who would be concerned. So, you know, the religion of woke has entered our children's classroom, but apparently we're not supposed to be able to say anything about that. So that's kind of the education curtain. A lot of failure, a lot of indoctrination happening, and a lot of secrecy around it. But COVID I mean, COVID happened, right? People were there sitting at their kitchen table with their kids. And they were like, what? You're learning. What are they teaching you? Or you don't know how to hold a pencil? Or, you know, well, I knew you could read the back of the cereal box, but you can't read this paragraph? Or wait, why are you being asked for information for to make decisions about context based on a paragraph that's been torn out of a book and you're not actually reading the whole book itself? And so parents just started asking all these questions. You know, they had assumed the best intentions. Why wouldn't they? Why would we think that, you know, our school system wouldn't be teaching our kids to read or would be teaching our kids to hate our country? Crazy. And, you know, we got a rude awakening, but thank goodness for it. I call it COVID lemonade.
So it seems to me you're talking about two issues and they may very well be combined, but I don't want to combine them at the second. I want to clarify the two issues. Okay. One of them is declining quality of, well, I'll just put it this way. Portland and maybe the state of Oregon, I don't remember which, but I know Portland has recently made it so that high school students basically no longer have the requirement to be able to read and write at a fairly fundamental level to get their graduate degree. And I don't mean to be the standard old person who is complaining about kids these days, but I remember when I was in high school, I just had an exchange not very long ago with a friend of mine who was complaining because his son had to read, I don't remember what it was, but it was some classic and was having to do homework. And honestly, when I was in high school, we read Scarlet Letter, we read Huck Finn, we read Aerosmith, we read, by which I don't mean the band, we read 20 tragedies in one. We could choose from a list. We had 20 tragedies. The point is, we had a fairly well-rounded punishment, but a fairly well-rounded education, an introduction, I should say, but fairly well-rounded survey. And likewise, we had calculus classes that were optional. And San Francisco recently did away, I believe, with algebra in ninth grade. I'm not sure if that's true, but they did something with algebra. So before we go to the sort of woke, before we go to the stuff that they are teaching, let's yes. talk about the stuff that they are not teaching.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, let's talk about it. School, so I don't think that people's expectations for school have changed, Derek. I don't think that, you know, I think you're talking, you say to act like an old man. I think parents' expectations for school are very similar to what your parents' expectations were or mine, that we were going to be given practicable skills, right? We were going to learn how to read, how to write, how to do math. And I think that that's still the expectation today, right? Parents want their kids to go to school, to learn to share, to be good citizens, right? Whatever that means today. And we can talk about that on the flip side. But as far as the practicable skills, that's not happening anymore. And I think we have to ask ourselves why. So there's a gentleman named Paulo Freire. I don't say his last name right because it's Brazilian and I don't speak Portuguese. So everyone can correct me on that. But he's a gentleman. He was a Marxist. He was a theologian. He was also an educator. And he wrote a number of books, including The Politics of Education and The Pedagogy of the Oppressed, where he talked about the fact that education should be an opportunity to awaken a critical consciousness in the child. And so the goal of education I don't think the expectations of the American citizenry has changed for what we get out of school. I do think most Americans want our children and expect children to learn how to read in school, but that's not the goal of the education system anymore. The goal of the education system now is to basically turn your kids into little social justice warriors, to turn them into activists. And all of the teaching that is happening now is just really laced with a lot of critical theory. A lot of generative themes are entered into the classroom through the way that the teachers interact with the curriculum in the classroom. So it's not enough to just look as a parent at the curriculum. There's a set of curriculum called Wit and Wisdom. And if you looked at it on its face, you and I would say, well, you know, there's nothing really wrong with these books, or we don't really have a concern. But you open up that teacher's manual and see the way that the teachers are urged to teach the information in the classroom, and it really takes on a whole nother angle. Like you said, there are two things happening. There's been a lack of practical skills being taught, but they're still spending that time in school, and that time is being used to teach them something else. And that's that critical, woke ideological bent that we can talk about as well. And we can talk about how badly the kids are doing, because they are doing really badly in school.
Before we go any further, I want to defend the word critical, because... I think that actually, even more than teaching students the reading, writing, and arithmetic, or together with it, what's really important is to teach them critical thought, by which I don't mean critical theory. I mean to teach them to be able to. So this has nothing to do with school, but it has everything to do with education. One of the best things my mom ever did for me was, when I was a child, she would almost never directly answer my questions. So I discovered this one day in junior high. I was riding in a car with my niece and her soccer team, 6 or 7 years old. And this one little girl saw a machine out in the field. And she said, "Mom, what's that machine?" And her mom didn't even look out the window. She just said, "I don't know, dear," and kept up with her conversation. That's not how my mom would have dealt with it. And I had experienced my mother enough to know how to slip into that role, which is, I said, "So what sort of field is it?" She said, "It's a hay field." I said, "So what sort of machine would be in a hay field?" And she said, "I don't know." I said, "What do you do with hay?" She said, "You cut it." And then I said, "What do you do after you cut it?" "You bale it." "What do you use to bale it?" And her eyes got really big, and she got it.
Yeah.
And so sorry to go off on the tangent, but I think that that's one of the roles of school, is to teach critical thinking, not critical theory, but critical thinking, and to give people tools to be able to make wise decisions. But in order to do that, you also have to have a foundation in math, science, reading, etc. So anyway, sorry for that.
I think it's such a good point. I think it's such a good point. And that's, part of our job as parents. I saw a tweet recently of a professor that was answering a student's question regarding some different issues about gender ideology. And, people were really applauding this professor for really walking the student through, as you said, this critical thought process of, asking questions and why would it be that way? And, what my response was to my friend who had posted it was, this is what should be happening at family dinner every night. That it's that engagement with your child about things that they're thinking about. And you're not just going to tell your kid that they're stupid, or that, you're going to ask them, well, why do you think that? What makes you think that in that way? Could there be any other things that could be affecting, your judgment about this issue? And that's part of the role of a parent. And, I'll be very clear and say right off the bat that, the school system only has kids for 7.5-8 hours a day. No, they're not fixing every societal ill during school. But I don't think it's too much to ask of the school system to teach a child how to read. 99% of children have the ability to learn to read by third grade. That's neurodiverse children as well. And so when you look at the amount of investment that we spend, the money in American public education that we spend, it'll be over $840 billion this past year in state and federal dollars going to the school system. There's just no excuse. And certainly if you owned a business, and I'm not saying a school system is a business because it is not, but if you can look at outcomes and best practices, if you have horrendous outcomes, why do you keep doing the same thing over and over again? Why are we not taking a step back and asking, well, why are we doing it this way? Do we like the results that we're getting? And that's what I did as a school board member. I am a disruptor by nature. I think I just ask that question, why are we doing it this way? And what the system really wants to do is just keep, being the system. The system doesn't like change. People who are in power and control get very comfortable. And so, and especially in a school system, they don't like people. coming in and asking those types of questions. But that's exactly what needs to happen right now. A lot more questions need to be asked about why are we spending money the way we are in this school district? And are we getting the results that we want out of that investment? If we're not, what are we going to do to change it? Hello, dog.
So none of those positions seem particularly controversial to me. And yet, so let's move to the other half. And there's, you can do this far better than I. How do you give an introduction to the, I have seen many video, I'm gonna say this and then you take it wherever you want. I've seen many videos of parents reading material at school boards and having their microphones cut off because the materials are obscene. Yeah. And there may be people who have no idea what I'm talking about with this. So can you introduce them to the concept mm-hmm. of, I'll just shut up, go ahead.
What's the rating of your show? You know, that's really
it's over air radio, which means that we follow George Carlin's rules, the 7 words you can't say on TV or something.
Got it. Well, I couldn't read from a lot of the books that I would find in a public school library then, and that's the real problem here. What moms and dads are concerned about in general is a lack of transparency and accountability when it comes to public education in America. Nothing really shows how bad things are more than some of the critical theory stuff, some of the CRT stuff that you've seen coming out of schools with the oppressed versus oppressor and their privilege stuff. That stuff is just incredibly divisive and bad for America. But then the graphic sexual content in a lot of the library books or curriculum in general, when you talk about comprehensive sex ed. And what I mean by that is, you know, abstinence is not, you know, what you and I would think about abstinence education now. It's all about all of the other things that you could do with a partner and a teacher going into really graphic detail about different methods of sexual intercourse or self-pleasure. It's very descriptive, let me just say. And I have no problem with sex ed in school, so everyone listening can just relax. I'm not like a prude or anything. I've got 4 kids. But I just don't think my kid needs a sexual spirit guide in school. But beyond that, the library books. Yes, parents have had to get up in front of school boards and read from books that are in the public school libraries, because on one side, the public schools and the unions are saying, you guys are ridiculous. This is you're making this up, that you want to ban books. That's what they'll say. Well, you just want to ban books. No one wants to ban books. Write the book, print the book, publish the book, sell the book, put it in the public library if your community wants to pay for that. But we're talking about a public school library. There are standards as to what should be taught in a public school. Children don't have unfettered access to the internet when they're at school. So you can't just type in, you know, how to make a bomb or how to give a blowjob at school and have that come up and be able to search it. There are filters for those things, but somehow it seems like there's an argument being made that the books should just be on an island of their own, where there should be no vetting process for any of those things. And that's just not the case. So I go back to transparency and accountability. There wasn't a vetting process for a lot of the way that these books got into the librarians. I think there are a lot of in libraries. And so, you know, parents got up and they brought the book and they read the book out loud. And then the school board chair says, no, 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 you can't. There are children in the room, or children could be listening, or, you know, this is a public meeting. You can't say those things out loud. And the parents are like, right. So why is the book allowed in my kid's library then? And it's just this back and forth. The only way that we've been able to really get a lot of sunlight on the issue is to really force our hand and go and read the books. You know, I'll tell you, I did an interview with 60 Minutes that should be airing every weekend, and then they push it and push it and push it. But in that interview, I read a lot of graphic sexual content to Scott Pelley. I think it was pretty shocking to him to hear some of the content that's in the libraries.
Instead of it being framed as, oh, so just to be clear, have you ever tried to remove, I don't know, Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn?
No, and no, and they tell lies. So I'll give you an example of like a lie that's told that is something that I, you know, people will try to use to make a monster.
By the way, the left is trying to remove Huck Finn at this point.
Yes. they're trying to remove all kinds of stuff. I think there was a whistleblower report that just came out that showed that the federal government, the Biden administration, tried to stop Amazon from selling books that were critical about COVID-19 and its origins. It's the iron law of woke projection. It never fails. Normally, if they're trying to accuse us of doing something, it's because the woke have been doing it already. But the one situation I'll give you is, you know, the diary of Anne Frank. So Anne Frank wrote her own diary. As you know, her father published it. There was another version that was published in the mid-90s that was enhanced, but that version is in many libraries across the United States. And not once would our parents ever have an issue with anyone reading the diary of Anne Frank. There is, however, a graphic novel adaptation of Anne Frank. You have to ask, you know, if you're a high school student, you should have the ability to read Anne Frank's diary. She wrote it when she was 13, I believe. So it should be at a reading level that the children should be able to engage with. And a school district in Florida just made the decision on their own. The principal said, you know, if we're doing Holocaust studies and I have got kids reading Anne Frank's diary, I want it to be her diary, the original diary. I don't want them reading a graphic novel. And that was a choice that the school board and the local school district made. And they removed the graphic novel adaptation. Just to be clear, they had over 50 copies in their library accessible to students of Anne Frank's diary, her own diary, the original version. And so, you know, that's like a lie that, you know, they take one little tiny part of something and then they try to make it, you know, oh, they... Moms for Liberty wants to ban Anne Frank. Nothing could be further from the truth. But the liberal left journalists right now just seem to be willing to tell quite a few whoppers.
Yeah, it's disheartening to an old growth lefty to see the left press lie this much.
You know what, Derek, but I just want to say, like, I'm a registered Republican now, just to be honest about it, but I was never a political person. I wasn't raised in a family that was particularly political. My parents voted, but I wasn't like a rah-rah Republican. You know, so the majority of our moms are really people that have never been political. And I would just say, like, I don't think that they've been welcomed with open arms from either party, to be honest with you, Republicans or Democrats. You know, our moms are very issue focused, and both parties kind of suck sometimes right now.
I want to talk more about the transparency and the censorship in a moment, but there's an issue that happened. You interviewed me, delightful. You're a great interviewer.
Oh, you
interviewed me a while back. And then something that happened in between then and now that really made me angry. And that was was it the Penn Awards at LeVar Burton, actor, advocate for reading, asked if there were any Moms for Liberty in the audience. And when there was nobody said yes, he then said, well, that's good because now I won't have to throw hands. And yep. The point that I want to make, and there was applause. And the point I want to make is that I find it horrible that the left and the literary world is condoning an adult male threatening physical violence against women. Well, full stop. threatening physical violence against women with whom he presumably disagrees on a political issue. I can't get past the men's violence against women issue on that. And also that I guess the reason is because he's arguing that you, and again, I don't agree with this. He's arguing that you believe in censorship, I guess, but what he's wanting to do is to beat you into not speaking. And I found that whole, and then Publishers Weekly retweeted that non-critically.
Correct.
This goes back to my thing shocking earlier about critical thinking, that one should be able to think one's way through what just happened.
It was shocking. I'm not going to lie. I mean, first of all, I'm 44 years old. I grew up watching Reading Rainbow. I loved LeVar Burton. Like I said, when I saw it, I was like, oh, I must have missed the episode where LeVar Burton covered anal rape and incest on, you know, Reading Rainbow. And then they were like, he was like, oh, look, now we've entered the portion of the book where the male cousin anally rapes the, you know, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about extremely graphic sexual content in these books that we're finding in elementary schools. And so it was shocking and sad. We were actually, Tina and I were in Nashville. We received a Patriot Award from Fox and we accepted on behalf of our moms across the country. And I saw that tweet come through and I was just, I actually think I started to cry, Derek, honestly, for a second. Like, I just couldn't believe that he would say that, and then Publishers Weekly would retweet it in the way that they did. And I think we just said, you know, like America's moms weep for how low they've sunk right now. It's not going to stop us, but it was really shocking. I'm not going to lie. It's gross.
So let's, since you have broached the topic of anal rape, the books that you're, so do give us a little bit of a description of some of the books that concern you that are in public libraries and, I'm sorry, school libraries, and give the age groups at which some of these are aimed.
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think that they're aimed at the elementary school students, but they've made it into some of the elementary schools. And I think that's just like a vetting process problem, right? I mean, I got to go and speak to Joy Reid on her show, The Readout, recently, and she brought up a book called All the Boys Aren't Blue by a gentleman named George Johnson. She was going to try to get me on... She wanted to get me on a sticking point about whether or not I was an expert in the book since I was able to, I knew what had happened in it. She said, you sound like an expert. So what is the author's name? And I knew the author's name was George Johnson, but he actually doesn't go by that name in the book. I think he goes by Matt, which is his middle name, I believe. Maybe that. So I didn't know what she was trying to do, but it doesn't matter. It was also ridiculous that she was trying to just play this game with me. And it just proves the point in this book. Which she said needs to be in the library because a child will, what if a child feels seen by this book? The child in the book has an adult family member that anally rapes them. And so I just said to her, we're talking about incest, rape, pedophilia, Joy. She said, well, what do you say to the parent whose child feels seen by this book? And my answer back was, I think I said, oh my gosh. And then my follow-up was, if we're talking about a child who feels seen by this book, that means they've been the victim of a predator. And then she just totally fell apart. And, oh, you're just making this up. And I said, no, Joy, you said if this child feels seen, we're talking about, you know, and we should do a much better job than throwing a book on a library shelf for a child to stumble upon if they're the victim of an adult predator. And, you know, there she just didn't want to engage with me in an honest conversation. But, you know, someone said, oh, Joy Reid, she's an idiot. I think Megyn Kelly said that. And then my friend James Lindsay said, no, not an idiot. She's a Harvard trained Marxist propagandist. And that's the truth, you know. So, you know, Marxists don't like to engage in honest conversation. That's not what they're interested in. And so obviously she wasn't interested in engaging with me in that way. The content's shocking. And it's at all different levels in different schools where it doesn't belong. And I think there's an argument to be made in this conversation about when you're talking about high school students, right? And when you're talking about especially AP courses that they're taking, and, you know, I think there's an argument to be made about, okay, well, is there literary merit, you know, and it, does this book serve a purpose? Why are we having the students read it? And if there's graphic content in it, so be it. And, you know, the parents should be aware, the kids should be aware, but I don't think it means it shouldn't be taught per se in a high school. But we're not even able to get to that point. I just keep saying to people when they're like, well, you know, you want to ban books. I'm like, let's just set the baseline really low. Let's just say no rape, no pedophilia, no incest. Let's just set the bar really low. And I just think, again, this is such a common sense issue. The majority of Americans agree with us. You know, you want to buy your kids books with all this information in it, go for it. Go to the public library if your community wants to pay for it. Although I think some of that's going to change too, to be honest with you. You know, people are getting more involved in their library boards and stuff, you know, about at least keeping that content out of the kids section. It's common sense.
Remember when I was in eighth grade, I asked my English teacher if I should read, oh, my mind's blanking on the book. The one with the boys on the island.
Animal Farm? No. I'm sorry. Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, Lord of the Flies. Thank you.
Lord of the Flies. And, yeah, sorry.
And she said, yes, you can read it, but I'm preparing you. It's got some pretty nasty stuff in it. And I mean, I think that's all you're talking about.
You know, I said Animal Farm. I bought my kids Animal Farm, Lord of the Flies. We did a whole, like, we did a lot of reading in the Justice House this past summer. So that's why it was kind of in my head thinking of books like eighth grade. What would an eighth grade boy want to read? But this is not, again, this is not about banning books. This is about age-appropriate content. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, librarians are supposed to curate content. You wouldn't have the same material that you would have in a medical college as you would in a seminary. Librarians curate content. And so the idea that of them curating content in a children's library and excluding sexual material just doesn't seem to be that controversial. But, you know, if the goal is to sexualize the kids, then I guess we know why they're fighting so hard to keep the books.
Well, we also know that many librarians have fought very hard to hide any gender critical books or to prohibit them from being in the libraries. I've heard of libraries who won't carry my books anymore, which don't have anything to do with gender ideology, simply because I don't believe men can become women. They're already curating books, and they'd have to curate books anyway because no library is infinite size. And right. So at some point you're going to have to choose which Nancy Drew mystery you're going to have, even dropping off all politics. You can't, there's no room for Jim Kelgard and Nancy Drew and everybody else.
Well, and there's not an enormous amount of money, honestly, put into library systems. So one of the things that Joy, when we were in the interview, we were chatting and she said something like, some of these schools don't even have libraries or librarians. And I was like, I know, isn't that awful? Like, you know, shouldn't we be having that conversation, right? Like, I feel like this is a luxury conversation that we're having. You know, we're talking about, you know, that children need to be seen by some book that has anal rape in it. Only 11% of the kids in your school district can read on grade level. Maybe we should start with that conversation, right? But, and she was like, oh, good point. But, you know.
I think also, one of the ways that I think about framing this is, why and who would be pushing for, in some cases, what could be called child porn in schools? So instead of, oh my gosh, you're thinking of banning books, it's like, oh my gosh, you're trying to put some material that's frankly pornographic into a children's library.
Yeah, and just to close out this point, so in my own school district, there were a bunch of books that were reviewed and they were put back on the shelf. And then our moms and dads brought the books that had been reviewed and put back on the shelf and read them out loud at the school district. And the school board chair wouldn't let them read the books out loud. And ended up removing the books because the parents were saying, if we can't read them out loud at a school board meeting, why would you allow them in our children's school? And they ended up actually getting removed after that. But that's the level of hypocrisy where we are, where if they can shove it under the rug, if they don't have to deal with it, they don't want to start a problem, they'll put them back on the shelf. But when you show it to them in their face, you know, it's just a common sense issue. And the majority of Americans say, yeah, that has no place around public school kids in public schools. So, you know, I think we're making progress on the issue, but it's a political bludgeon. I'll be honest with you, the Biden administration and the left, the Democrats have wanted to use it as this bullying weapon against us to try to make us look like crazy, prudish fools. But we are none of those things. We're just moms. So
there's something I think we mentioned in the interview you did of me that I want to raise again, just because, and sorry if I'm taking over the interview, but I feel strongly about this, that I don't understand. It has to do with pride flags, that you have a lot of propagandizing going on in classrooms. And I just want to make a statement that I think one could make the argument for having no flags at all in class. But if one were going to have flags, they would be maybe national, state, county, city, if cities have flags. That I don't think there should be any political flags in. And I'm a you're not going to find a more hardcore environmentalist than I am, and I don't think the Earth flag should be in there. What I'm trying to do with this is make an entree into the sort of taking over of class by propaganda as opposed to actual teaching. So take any of that any direction you want.
No, I mean, you're right. There are pride flags, trans flags all over classrooms, all over America, you know, little stickers that say, you are safe here. This is a safe place. Like, well, what does that mean? If you're a teacher and you don't have a safe place sticker, does that mean that you're not a safe place for a student? Right. And so there's an organization that goes around and gives pride flags out, and went to a school and gave a bunch of pride flags and wanted every teacher to have one in the classroom. We tried to go give American flags, and they had distributed the pride flags, but they wouldn't distribute the American flags. So that our chapter got sassy with them and tried, but we fixed it. We fixed that issue. And now there's a policy in their district that says no pride flags, no other flags besides the American flag or the state flag in the classroom to be displayed. And I agree with you. I mean, you know, Mao, during the Cultural Revolution, he shut schools in China down for 2 years. And teachers went through a re-education process. And if that sounds familiar to Americans, we shut our schools down for 2 years, basically. And our teachers go through crazy professional development and trainings that are a lot like re-education. That's what's happening right now in America. We are in the middle of a cultural revolution that has been foisted upon us. And there are a number of different battlegrounds. One of them is the school system, the education system, K-12 education, and our higher ed institutions have been completely captured. Our judicial system is partially captured at some levels. And we are in the middle of a cultural revolution. And so parents are waking up to the fact that just like Mao in China with tearing down the four olds, that's happening in our American public school system. We see that happening in our culture with statues being torn down and different things. And there's just an attack on faith, on family, on freedom, on our country, on the heteronormative status of anything, you know, as they would say. And there's a wedge being driven between the parent and the child. It's very intentional, and we can talk about specifically how that's happening. But the bottom line is there's the building of the Red Guard in America, and the public school systems are being used to do that.
Talk about the separating of the parent from the child.
Okay. So the first thing that's happening in many schools is this, you know, you're safe here. You know, you're safe here. You're safe to be who it is you really are. You can be yourself. We're here. We love you. We're your, you know, the free mom hugs t-shirt, right? Like, you know, I said, if some woman puts on a free mom hugs shirt and tries to come to my child, she better be ready for me. Because the only one giving free mom hugs in this house is me, right? To my children. There is this idea that the state knows better than you for your child. And I think we saw that really exhibited during COVID, right? There were a lot of decisions that were being made in these school districts for kids that parents were like, wait a second, you know, this is my child. I direct their education. I direct their upbringing. But the government certainly does think that they know better than us in many instances. The place where we see this in the scariest way and the most concerning way are with school counselors. Mental health, the children are not okay. The kids are not okay in America. They are dealing with a number of different issues and their mental health is really not fantastic. I can make the argument for the fact if you, you know, don't teach children how to read, write, or do math, and then they constantly feel that they are failing, that certainly does affect their ability to feel successful and to have a good self-esteem and confidence. In certain situations, Derek, there are school counselors who are having private conversations with our kids, especially in middle school. We're seeing a lot of this. So gender ideology is being introduced to classrooms across the United States. It's happening as early as kindergarten in some places. In New Jersey and Maryland, gender ideology is introduced in the kindergarten classroom. So you're 5 years old, you believe in Santa. Now your teacher's telling you you could be a boy or you could be a girl, or maybe you're not a boy or a girl. You could be a non-binary person or a tree that day, maybe, or something, if you feel like it, a furry, I don't know. And so just from the aspect of a five-year-old thinking about that, now you're being told your parents are maybe wrong about something that is very basic, right? Something that you've always just known to be true. You're a boy, you're a girl, you have a penis, you have a vagina, you're a boy or a girl, right? You just know. And so now all of a sudden we're destabilizing the child at that first level. Then we're finding that in elementary school, middle school, counselors are encouraging children to talk to them about a lot of different issues, including their sexual orientation or their perceived gender identity. And so you have a child being taught that they might have been born in the wrong body. You have a lot of different aspects, and it's not just school, social media, certainly in our society, pushing this into our kids' lives and brains. And then this perfect storm happens where maybe home isn't safe. And, you know, as a counselor, maybe I need to be your guide in your life, child. And, you know, do you think you were born in the wrong body, right? Maybe you think you're really a boy and not a girl? And so 6 pages of forms were filled out with an 11-year-old child in Florida about what bathroom do you want to use when you're at school? A girl, this is a girl. What pronouns would you like to use when you're at school? What name would you like to use at school? What name would you like us to use with your parents when we talk to them about you? And this child is set down a path of social gender transition by a school system. And we know that social transition immediately moves them down this pathway of medical transition as it stands right now. And the parent is totally left out of this. A little girl in Clay County, Florida, tried to kill herself at school. And when the parents arrived, she was in the middle of being Baker acted. It was then that the parents found out that the daughter had been put into a social transition program by counselors and administrators at the school. And when they challenged why that had happened, the answer back was, well, we know that you're Catholic. And we were, you know, we figured you wouldn't affirm, and your daughter told us you wouldn't affirm. And we felt that it was in the best interest of the child to help her. And so just the idea that school systems are thinking that, you know, that parents are abusive, that won't love their kids. There's this whole thought process going on, you know, well, and I kind of had an epiphany the other day, actually, I'll share with you, but school systems are kind of taking this position of, well, some parents may not be okay if their kid comes out to them. So we have to protect them from that. Some parents may not want to affirm their child's want of a gender transition, go figure. Since it's impossible. And there are a million comorbidities that are ignored, right? When we just go down that path, with a child, but, they think they need to protect the child from the parents. And that's just totally, ridiculous. It's 2024.
When you interviewed me, one of the things that I said in response to this topic was that Judith Herman, in her book Father-Daughter Incest, said that if she could change just one thing about stopping, one thing, social thing to stop father-daughter incest, it would be any time any adult tells you that you're supposed to keep a secret, that you tell everyone. And it, you know,
It's grooming, yeah. Derek. It's grooming. There, you know, I mean, no adult should be telling you, your child, to keep a secret from you. And if they are, that's a red flag, immediate red flag. And so just the fact that school systems are keeping secrets from parents in this way, it's just completely outrageous, totally against the parental rights, totally outside of the bounds of the school system, and needs to be stopped.
And dropping off parents, even, this is, I mean, everybody has known that if you have one adult or one small group of adults telling the child to not tell other people things, that that is a predecessor, that that's a predecessor to exploitation of the child. That's even, again, I'm not disagreeing with you on parents' rights, but it's like, even taking that out of the picture, it's just bad. It's never. And we have this being done institutionally. And we're starting to run out of time. We've got a few minutes. And
I wanted to tell you my thought, though, that I had.
Great, please.
So I think it must have been really hard to come out, like, years ago, right? There was a time when it was really hard, if you were gay, to come out to your parents and tell them that you were gay. So I think that there, we have a lot of adults who have a lot of hurt around that issue, right? When I served on school board, there was a gentleman who was an older gentleman who was the head of the NAACP. And he had a lot of hurt about his time in the school system and things that had happened to him. And I think it's important that we acknowledge that and we're honest about it and we help people with their feelings and their hurt. But this idea that adults are going to try to live vicariously through children and protect other children from harm that they think that they had, it's 2024. I'm not your mom. I'm my kid's mom. Don't tell my kid that I don't love them or won't accept them as they totally are as a human being. And I think as society progresses and we have new generations of parents that are raising children and, you know, that the way that the parents of today handle the situation is different than parents in the past. But I think you have a segment of adults who carry around a lot of hurt, who want to make sure that hurt doesn't happen to kids. I don't think it's ill-intentioned at the heart of it, but it certainly isn't in the best service of children today. What do you think?
I agree with you, and the only asterisk I want to put in is I can think of a few people for whom I don't think it's well-intentioned.
Okay. But I think for the vast majority of people, you know, when you...
I don't disagree. I don't want to get sued, so I don't want to say a couple names. We'll say them afterwards.
Okay.
So the last question is, how do people find out more about Moms for Justice and or join?
Moms for Liberty. I'm Tiffany Justice.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry about that. Moms. Same deal. Sorry about that. Moms for Liberty.
Okay. So Moms for Liberty, I never thought I'd be doing this, Derek. I never thought that I would, you know, run a parents group or to be an advocate in this way or an activist. I think I'm a community organizer now. I had no idea that I was going to do this, but I am. So just to be clear, if you're listening and you're like, wow, I never thought about joining a parent group like this, I feel you, I hear you, and I ask you to think about it again because we need you. We, as I said, are nonpartisan, nonprofit. Go to momsforliberty.org. You can check out our website. We have a big map there. You can click on your state, see where we have chapters. We're set up by county. If we don't have a chapter in your county, click to start one, please. It may be it's not you who runs the chapter, but you need to have like-minded people together to get a chapter up and going. You can't do this by yourself. No one can. So it's a process. If you have a chapter near you, go check it out. They have meetings once a month. Just go and meet people. And I think you'll be really, heartened by a group of people who really love children and believe that America is a beacon of light for the rest of the world and that we need to all work together to try to help move the world forward. And ensure again that, you know, American kids are learning to read, write, and do math in school.
And that'd be a great place to end, but I want one more question, which is, and the people in Moms for Liberty, you've got lefties, righties, African-American,
gay,
Latino,
straight,
Latina, black, gay, white, straight,
Jewish, atheist, Catholic, Christian, Muslim. We've got lots of different people, and that's the goal here. You know, politicians want to keep us divided in this country. That's how they keep power. And the way the American people can have power is to come together on issues that we care about and have our voices heard. And so that's the goal of Moms for Liberty. It's, you know, if anything's going to bring people together in this country, I think a love for our kids can do it.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you so much for saying all that. And thank you for your work in the world. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Tiffany Justice. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.